Well, on today's show, my guest is none other than Deandra Simmons, who starred in the hit TV show Real Housewives of Dallas that aired on Bravo TV. I quickly became a big fan and noticed her Christian views and her willingness to speak up and speak the truth about herself and the life around her. Her beauty, her fashion, talents, and her entrepreneurial spirit is what drew me back to watching the show each week. Thanks for being on the show, Deandra.
Oh, yes, Erica. I'm so glad to be here. We've been chatting a little bit on social media, and I finally get to meet you in person.
Yeah.
And you're just as lovely as you are whenever we're talking.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm from Dallas as well, and now I live in South Dakota. And actually, this is a funny thing about the Housewives of Dallas. We named our own. My daughter's 29, and there's a really cool little town that we live in here, and it's called Spearfish. And we call it the Real Housewives of Spearfish. And so
Oh my gosh, Spearfish. So Spearfish is where again? Where is that?
It's in South Dakota in the Black Hills.
Oh, I've been there. I've been to South Dakota in the Black Hills. I did a movie about the Sioux Lakota Indians.
Yes, Lakota Indians. Did you?
Yeah, a long time ago. And I had to go interview a bunch of people up there. And back then there was nothing to eat but buffalo burgers and iceberg lettuce. That's what I remember. I was like, what do you people eat here? Every single time I went, it was steak, buffalo burgers, iceberg lettuce, no vegetables. I was like, if I had to come up here and do a movie for a long period of time, I'd be in deep trouble. That's why I think it was Kevin Costner had like sushi and all kinds of things flown in when he was filming Dances with Wolves.
Oh, yeah. And then he had a restaurant. He had Jake's and he had Diamond Lil's. He let that go. But yeah, it's really cool that my husband is the biggest fan of Kevin Costner. And he kept saying, oh, let's go to Kev's place, his restaurant, you know, in Deadwood, like he knew him. And, but it was the coolest thing because his parents lived here and his mom had come to a Bible study that we were hosting years ago. And my husband actually ran into him one time at the airport. So he called me and I thought he was kidding and he got a picture and everything.
So his mom came to your Bible study. Now, is she a believer?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so the families are believers. That's
yes.
Amazing.
Yeah, oh, wow. They are. They, yeah. His mom and dad used to live in Spearfish. And back when we lived here, my daughter was a senior and she was out. And anyway, I walked over and I said, aren't you Mrs. Costner? And she said, oh, yeah. She said, I remember you. Your daughter sang praise and worship. And her husband says, well, get your coffee and come on over and sit down with us. And so my joke is I had breakfast with the Costners, but not really, but sort of.
But well, you know, God brings everybody together. When you find out someone's a believer, it's like, okay, we have something in common. And so you feel more safe too about the rapport and about what kind of communication you're going to have. And it's just a safety. If I meet somebody and they say, oh, I'm a believer, I will open up more to them than somebody that's a non-believer, only because I have that safety and security that God will protect the conversation in many ways.
Yes.
I mean, that's not always, because there are people that are, fraudsters and charlatans, but at the same time, God has given me the ability to have some intuition about what people are, you know, okay to talk to and communicate, and then be able to share my love of Christ and spread the word about, you know, good and bad things in my life. And, you know, I wrote you a long interview about Real Housewives, and that was not the best of my Christianity on that show, but and I knew every time I did something wrong or I was bad, you know, that I knew, I said, oh God, why'd I do that? And then I had to deal with it. I had to pray about it. I had to ask God for forgiveness. And I just had to say, okay, I'm going to move on and do my best the next day or not. It's a long process, 5 years on that show. And it's very difficult. And it's very difficult if you are a believer. And I think the fame aspect is really hard too, because fame and ego are the worst killers of a lot of Christians in general, and people's humility goes out the window. You know, that's hard. So,
well, you know, I can only imagine. I have a dear friend of ours who's like family, and they were on the very first show of Trading Spouses.
Oh, wow.
And what she, it was Tammy and Yuki Nakamura, and he's a plastic surgeon, you know, in the Dallas area. And, you know,
I know who that is. Yeah, I know exactly who that is. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've known them since I was 16 and been family friends a long, long time. But, you know, just that one show, I saw what it did to her. So I can only imagine, you know, because they take things and they twist it, you know, and then they make it interesting, you know, I guess. And you're thinking, shoot, I have to I have to deal with this now because of what they want to do to make it a good show.
And well, it's all, and I've said this before, I don't know if you've read this in any of my interviews, but it's wash, rinse, repeat. Fight, make up, fight again, you know, be friends, fight, make up. It's the same on every franchise. And if you watch all the shows, you can see the underflowing current and theme are the same in all the shows. So they will have the same experiential things. Like we had an Honest Tea. They'll have that. They have that in Atlanta. All these different things, the different cast trips, things happen the same on all the shows, which I think is a problem with the franchise overall, because it makes it less interesting. And at some point it's going to burn out because you can't keep wash, rinse, and repeat the same stories over and over on different franchises. Housewives has a timeline. And I always said when I joined the franchise, this is so funny, I didn't tell you this, that I had a timeline as a housewife. I don't know if it's 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. God has that all planned out. But whenever my time has come, I'm ready to step down, and it's going to be, okay, well, that was 5 years of my life and I did that for 5 years and now I'm on to the next thing. But I don't look at it and say, oh, I wish I was a housewife. Oh, I must be a housewife. Oh, you know, and you just think about it was another thing and I did in my life. But a lot of people can't deal with not being a housewife anymore. They lose the fame overnight. They lose the notoriety. You're not, when you're not on TV, you're not important. You're not current. So yeah, people aren't as excited about you, lose followers. And it's a hard thing. It's very hard for people's ego. Mm-hmm. Luckily for me, I was an actor before, was not famous as an actor. I've been an actor my whole life. And so I had my time on the stage. My family's also very well known in Dallas. I was on the stage as a local philanthropist, socialite that raised tons of money, always giving speeches, always out in front. I worked for President Bush. So I was always in the forefront, not so much as being a housewife, but I was used to spotlight. And when it goes away, it goes away. And I spend time in my home with my doggies and my books and my husband and enjoy my cooking.
Exactly. Well, and I'm sure, you know, I love the part about when you said that you got asked to be on the show and how you prayed about it, how you mm-hmm. prayed to ask God's direction. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think that so many times people, you know, say someone gets asked to do something like that, they may jump and say, yes, I'll do it. But mm-hmm. is that really best for them? And did they really ask for God's direction in that?
Well, the funny thing about it is I thought, surely, God, this is not what you want me to do. No way would this ever go, whatever, this would fly past heavenly angels into your realm and you would say yes. But then I thought, well, and my mother, first person I went to was my mother, my husband, obviously, and said, this is an opportunity that's come to me. Now, the first year it was airing, I was not on because I declined, not because I wasn't asked. I was literally, they begged me to be on the first year. And I said no, because I was chairing the Salvation Army Luncheon, and I was chairing Cancer Blows, and I was chairing UNICEF all in the same year. That was a lot. And it wasn't fair, I felt like, for me to join a reality show in the midst of doing that, because they wanted to see what was happening in your real life. And there's no way Salvation Army and all these other UNICEF wanted cameras yeah. there. And so it was kind of like, that was what was, you know, really taking up my time. So I declined and I said, it's not really fair, but if you want me next year, come back to me and we'll talk. But I had a long time to pray, a long time to think about it. And I also at the time didn't really believe, and I still believe, that they did not have the right cast to start the show. I think that's why it's off the air right now. I think they had started with a different cast, because most people don't know it was called How to Make It in Dallas. It wasn't Real Housewives.
Really?
So yeah, these women were trying to make it, whether it be in the social realm, you know, in the business realm, whatever they had aspiration wise, they were trying to make it in Dallas. So I had already made it in Dallas. I really didn't, you know, that didn't fit me. And then they didn't choose then the people that would be, I would say, very similar to me in Dallas Society, that should have been on the show, that would have done the show if it would have been a different cast. So then you got to start in. They called me in the middle of season one and said, okay, if we're having a struggle, we're having a hard time with this show. If we change it from How to Make It in Dallas to Real Housewives of Dallas and Bravo accepts it, will you be on the show? I said, no, because I told you I have commitments and I don't back. I always keep my word, people. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I do it. Yeah. And I said, and number two, the timing is not right for me. And I really still don't believe that you have the right cast. So come back to me next year. I'll talk to you about cast. That's when Cameron and I came together as a package deal. She did, you know, we don't really have a good relationship now, but she did wait for me at the time. And we came on together because we knew each other socially. Now, she's a lot younger than me, so we weren't close friends, but we had been in the junior league and cattle barons and all that together. But so the second season I went on, but I, whenever they said, okay, we're ready, and then they sent the contract over, it was a matter of praying, and I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And for the time I got down to actually signing the contract, I had put so many riders and clauses in my contract that there's no way any network would sign me. There's no way. I mean, because you understand, if you know anything about these contracts, they take a percentage of your business. Did you know that?
Of your actual, like your skincare business or any of your
percentage of any business you have. So I did not, I had had a business for since 2008. And my mother had a business since 1998. Why would we give them a percentage of a business? Plus we had been on Christian television. I'm not giving them money from those customers. So it didn't make sense to me, but I also, so I cut that out. I also cut out any future businesses I might have. You know, and then I did other things in the contract that I can't remember. It was a long, long list, but I believe one of them was they couldn't film me in the bathroom or something. Because they can, those contracts, they can put my head on a different person's body, different voice. They can do whatever they want with you. So it was a very different contract than other people. And so, and then I just wish, I thought there's no way. And so I put out a fleece. You know how Gideon put out a fleece and said, God, if you want me to lead Israel, then you have to put dew on this fleece. So God did it. Well, then he said, okay, well, God, I'm still not quite sure. So I'm going to put out another fleece. And this is in Judges. I'm going to put out another fleece and you're going to have to do it again. And God doesn't like to be tested, but God, sure enough, did it for Gideon. There was dew the next day as well. So I put out several fleeces. So they would call me. This is the funny part, and I'll wrap it up. They would call me and said, okay, we agreed to, you know, this percentage or whatever, we're not taking a percentage of the business. And I'd be, well, what about this? Well, we're not going to do that. And I said, well, sorry, call me back when you're serious. And then my daddy used to say, good Southern man, well, when you're ready to come to the lick log, then we'll talk. So the last conversation, and I kept putting out a fleece, okay, God, if they come back and they let me do this, if they do this. So I said, you know what? Don't call me back. I said, I'm not doing the show. I said, when you're ready to come to the lick log and you accept every single thing in that contract, then we'll do the show. But until then, I don't want to do the show because I don't need you. I said, I'm established in Dallas. I have my own money. I don't need this program. And the only reason I did it is because I thought, well, it would be really good for me with my businesses and it would help. But my businesses were doing well. This is way before the pandemic. And we were on Christian TV. And also, I thought I really wanted to go back into acting and it would give me on-screen time where I could, when I would meet with agents, I didn't have enough followers to get signed up and all these different things. So I just, and then God just did everything. He did all of it. And I thought, oh God, really? Because I was hoping he'd say no.
And everything lined up for you to do it. So was you were on 5 years. Was it 5 seasons or 5 years?
I was on 4 seasons and 5 years of filming. So I filmed the first year that I didn't do, part of the first year. I filmed the last season that we didn't show, which was all of the, I filmed with all the new potential cast members that they didn't renew the contracts for anybody.
Really?
So I did a lot of filming in the summer after 21. So we wrapped in April of 21. And then that whole summer I filmed with almost every potential person that they were going to hire. And I knew that they weren't going to continue the show because in my heart, I believed that they needed more people to look at. And I told the producer, I said, you're not going to get the show back because they need more people to look at. There's just not enough people. Because I could tell, I know who's good on camera. You got to understand, I'm a producer. That's why I can do this. I'm a producer and I went to directing school. Yeah. So I can tell by looking at somebody on camera if they're going to make it in 5 minutes or not. Yeah. And there was some people that were not going to make it. I could just tell you, Bravo was going to say no. Andy was going to say no. I knew it. And I specifically called out the people that weren't going to make it and they didn't make it. Well, then they needed to replace 3 people at least. So, because they need 6 people. We didn't have 3 to replace. So they're not going to take, you know, 2.5. Doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, that was, I think, the real reason. The other reason is they had a lot of racial undertones on our show, which unfortunately didn't, you know, people just didn't behave the way they should. And that was very unfortunate, I think. I think at the time in our country, which is still very prevalent, it was very sensitive. So honestly, I just said, look, let me take this as a teachable moment and stop. Don't question. Just let me hear your experience because I don't know your experience. I didn't grow up like you. So let me know your experience. And I learned so much more by doing that than by digging my heels in and saying, I've never done anything wrong my whole life. I'm fine. You know, that's not how you handle things like that. So I really had a growing I had a lot of growth in that time for me, and learning about other cultures and other people that grew up in our country that had different experiences, that were immigrants. I mean, it was great for me, but unfortunately it wasn't great for the rest of the girls on the show.
Right. So, was the last season was her name Tiffany, the doctor?
That was my friend who I believe I could have done better by knowing these women had problems with her and fighting about things that were very unimportant on the big realm of things. I think I should have just said, okay, I'm hearing what you're saying. Why don't I put a dinner together and let's talk a real conversation?
Yeah.
Why do you have these? What are questions that you have and how can we fix this? And the other reason I really believe that it didn't come back is that no one knew, but my mother was ill during that time. And okay. I had to call Bravo and tell them. And she was diagnosed, and I'm not going to talk about it, but she was the other reason I believe the show probably wasn't renewed at the time is because my mother is almost like the seventh housewife. She's, just as important as anyone else. In fact, she's way more popular than me. So, I mean, I admit it. I'm like right on her coattails. That's great. You know, make her the star. I do not care because guess what? I still get the benefit. I'm not stupid. So,
yeah. So she was sitting down. I was at E-Bar and El Pascal, and she was sitting a few rows, a few seats down, and I was going to go talk to her, and I didn't. I didn't want to bother her at dinner, but.
She had been diagnosed with an illness at that time. She's 82 years old. I called the network and told them what was happening. I wanted to be honest with them because I felt like it was very important that I was always honest with the network the whole time. I don't have anything bad to say about the network. I know that right now there's a horrible article out in Vanity Fair about housewives and reality TV and people taking advantage and what these networks do to you. But everything, once again, God drives my life. So everything is what I do and what I say is my mistake and my choice, and I have free will. If I want to drink too much on the show, which I did several times, that's my free will. I make the mistake. I get up the next day and say, oh my gosh, why did I do that? Yes, there are drinks available. Yes, there are different things, but you choose to do what you want to do. And so I never have, like, I have a great relationship with NBC. I have a great relationship with Bravo. I have a great relationship with the vice president, the president, everybody else, and the producers. I don't have anything bad to say. All I have bad to say is Deandra didn't necessarily behave in her best interest the entire time. But that's what you're looking for anyway. So bravo to me. You know, so.
That's cute. Bravo to me. I love that. Well, I know. I think one of the times I reached out to you was when I saw some things going on between you and your mother. And, you know, I've been close with my mom for years, like you and your mom are. But we have had, yes, mothers and daughters can have those. And I remember that's when I reached out because I was like, you know, about, I don't even remember. It's been a long time ago, but I was asking things about that. And was that really real? And was that really your relationship and things like that? And, you know, I think that really spoke volumes that you were just so honest, because I was like, wow, I can't believe, you know, her mom saying that to her or acting like that to her and how that all happened. And then you just said, you know what, that's just how it goes. I mean,
well, I also, it's funny because I got so much support from people that had difficult relationships with a parent, mm-hmm. and most of the time it was the mother. I'm an only child, so you can imagine how close we are. We're also very, very much alike in many ways and very much not alike in other ways. So there's both, you've got both dynamics. Also, I wanted to, it was very hard for me, but I thought it was important to show that because then other people could say, oh, I'm not the only one that has this crazy relationship going on with my mom. Now, when you said something positive to me, on the other hand, I have a bunch of people that said negative to me. How could you talk to your mother like that? That's horrible. I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you're a disgusting, awful person. I mean, I had one recently, disgusting, awful human being. I can't believe you talked to your mother like that. And by the way, you're not as famous as you think you are. I'm like, what did I say I was famous? I mean, it's just, you get two different sides. And most of the time, like I told you on the bullying on social media, it's not even that person. It's somebody else or somebody pretending to be somebody else. So I got to take it with a grain of salt. Now, the first thing that the woman said was, she sent me one message and she said, I don't like your Instagram stories. I think you shouldn't call out people. You shouldn't be calling out your friends in the background. Nobody cares. I'm thinking, well, why are you watching?
Unfollow. You
and why? That's why I said, I told her, I said, to unfollow me. If you don't want to watch my stories, unfollow me. You don't have to. Nobody's forced. I go, nobody has a gun to your head is making you watch my stories. And why are you watching? You hate me so much. And that's when she started on my mom and this, and nobody likes me. And I'm so unpopular. And blah, 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 blah. That's just typical it goes down that rabbit hole, and then I just delete her. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't win those people. But my mom and I have been through what I will tell you. And I said, I told you on my interview before when I wrote it out, we conquered things and discussed things that we would never, ever discuss or conquer in real life because we would sneak them under the rug like everybody else does. My mom is an old school person. She's 82 years old. She's not the person that she's one of those people like my dad didn't want to go to a lot of counseling. You know, that's kind of not their generation.
Yeah.
We are the people that my generation, I'm 54. I put everything out there. And my husband said, you know, I'm the optimal oversharer. I tell way too much stuff about myself, which made me good on reality TV.
Yeah.
But so it's two different generations. My grandmother and mother used to say, now don't air your dirty laundry like Ann Landers said. And then I would do all that. But I believe it was really cathartic. We discussed things. They didn't necessarily always come to the resolution I was hoping. But at the same time, we talked. And then we moved past it and moved on. And I think we're at a better place. We do have a very close relationship. We talk every day.
Mm-hmm.
I call her either to check on her, see how she is, what she's doing. She has a lot of friends and a big social group. And then we go to dinner, try to go to dinner once a week. And then also we go to church on Sundays and we go to lunch after church.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know what? I'm 54 as well. And my mom's 83. So we're right about there. And, you know, it's my daughter is an only child now, you know, and her dad, he just has not been in her life that much. But we've got that, you know, really close dynamic. I mean, the reason why I moved back to South Dakota is because she and her husband are 5 miles from me, and they're having their first baby in January.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's exciting. But, you know, that closeness, it can be a push-pull. But I think that forgiveness is key in a lot of things, even I know it has been for me to get through forgiveness for, you know, things in the past. And I know that's helped a lot. So anyway, well,
when forgiveness doesn't make sense, it's probably when you need to forgive the most. And
yes,
that also has happened to me with regards to the housewives. There's a lot of women I don't want to forgive, but I have to forgive because God commands me to do it in the Bible. But just because you forgive doesn't mean you forget or you go back to abusive relationships. That's the most important thing I want to say today is that you are required to forgive people, but you do not have to go back to an abusive relationship and stay involved, whether it be a friendship, a spouse, a partner. You can create boundaries in a family relationship. There are so many things you can do to protect yourself and not continue the abuse.
That's absolutely true. And I talk about that in my book that I have out, and it's about, you know, creating boundaries, because a lot of people do get stuck in saying, you know, well, I don't want to forgive them because they did this to me. And how could I ever forgive them? Of course, first and foremost, like you said, Jesus forgave, you know, God forgave us and we are commanded to forgive. But also, it doesn't mean that you establish a relationship sometime. And, you know, I've had to do that quite a bit with family members. And you know what? It ends up being the healthiest later on. It's hard at the time to create that boundary, to maybe not be around that person for a while. But when you do that and you go off on your own and you pray about it and you let God take care of it rather than you trying to take care of it, it ends up being a lot more positive than the outcome than it would have been if you would have pushed to try to do it yourself. That's what I've found for me.
And it also, it hurts you more than it hurts the other person because they don't care. Yes. So what you're doing is you're letting that bitterness eat you up inside. And when, if you just forgive them and move on and just, you know, move on with your life, you don't have to suffer anymore. So that's where I am with the people that have hurt me. I just have forgiven them. I have moved on. I do not think about it or them unless it's being brought up to me. And then I will go back a little bit, but I will not go back and allow myself to be in a situation. I have a close circle of friends and colleagues. Some of my friends have been in my life since I was 12 years old, believe it or not. My other friends are, people that have developed or, you know, over the years we've developed friendships. I have 30 something years, my friend group from college, we still are on a chat. We chat every day. So it's like 12 girls on a chat. So I have long lasting friendships, which on the show, it doesn't seem like that because they're not showing that, but I do have very long lasting friendships. I've never had a fight with some of these girls or guys ever. They just don't do that, you know? So funny.
I understand. That's great. So Tell us about your, okay, and then we'll move on to some other things and all the cool things that you're doing now. I mean, that you were doing and then have grown, and then things that you're doing now and you've added to. So things that I get to see and follow on Instagram that are really cool. But tell us your very first, I mean, not your very first, your very favorite moment or your very favorite memory of being on Real Housewives of Dallas. Like the most fun or?
Let's see, what was the most fun?
Yeah.
I think the first, my first season was the most fun because it was uncharted territory.
Yeah.
And it was, you never know what's going to happen and you become famous overnight. So, yeah. And then you have people just blowing up your phone on your direct messages. Oh, I love you. Oh my gosh. I'm like, and I really didn't have any hate. I didn't have any hate the first season, maybe 3 or 4 messages. The one season I started getting a lot of hate and it flipped where it was more hate to negative to positive was the second season. So my first season, which was the second season, it was a lot of fun. And we went to Mexico. We had a blast. We did a lot of fun things. And when you start a reality show the first year, you're usually not going to be the center of attack. So you get to breathe the first year. Now the formula is the second year, you're going to be at the center of attack. Okay. And then you get to breathe again for maybe 1 or 2 years. And then you're going back to be the center of attack again. So I tended after the second year to continue to be the center of attack for some reason. I think the third season, they went easy on me. They went easy on me on the third season because the second season was really hard.
Yeah.
And if you noticed at the second season, I sat next to Andy. The third season, I was at the end of the couch. Well, there was a reason because I really didn't, they kind of kept me out of all of the arguing and everything that season. So, and that's how you get you're sat in different places. And they also didn't want me to sit there and fight with Leanne again the whole time because they just didn't want that. So, and then the last season was not easy for me because I was trying to defend Tiffany the whole time and nobody really understood that. And they didn't understand. Tiffany's a working woman like I am. So she has a job, a family, a professional career. It's a lot different than someone that doesn't. So her time is, and days is meted out in different ways than other women. So I think people were, well, she has to only work at this time. She can only do this. She's an anesthesiologist. She gets it at 5. She can't film during the day. That's, you know, that's what she does for a living.
Yeah.
So, but it was the most fun. The trips were usually pretty fun, except for when we went to Copenhagen. That was a nightmare for me. Let me think. Where else? We went to Thailand. That was, parts of that were fun. Parts were not so fun.
Yeah.
My birthday, when I turned 50, was a blast. We went to Carrie's home in Mexico as well. Yeah. That was really fun.
Was that the glass that got broken? There was some place that there was a glass that somebody went through.
That was the last season. That was so funny. That was the very last season at South Fork.
And that's what it was.
I had gone to bed and Brandy and Carrie were up, you know, doing their shenanigans late at night, which are usually really funny. But we were told not to go into this particular part of the house that had that glass there. And they, of course, they went across the glass, you know, had too many cocktails and then fell into the glass. And then because I was the senior at that point, I was the one that was made to, I was the senior person, like literally 10 years older than anybody, Carrie was close to my age. I was meant to call out everyone. Well, Carrie and I had been fighting all season long. Last thing I wanted to do was call Carrie out because she was going to get so hot-headed about it, but she did.
Yeah. But
I had to, they tell you, okay, now ask them, do this, do that. You know, and then they have, it is true that if you're not saying the right things, they'll put up the phone and it'll say, ask her why her husband was here, whatever it is. You know? You're like, I'm going to ask that question.
You're like, I don't know. Yeah, the trips, that was definitely fun. And, you know, I don't even watch other Housewives of Beverly Hills or anything. I think I just started watching it originally because I'm from Dallas. And I thought, oh, this is fun. And then I got hooked in and it was always fun to see, oh, have I been to that restaurant or have I been to that place? That was really kind of fun for me to just, I don't know, check out and see. And then, sometimes the fights got, of course, I love seeing all of you beautiful ladies and just like your lives and the fashion and things like that. But then the fights, sometimes it's like enough with the fights.
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing is like, that's what they think that viewers want to see are more fights. I thought what was different about our franchise was the comedic aspect of it.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny, lighthearted. Brandy and Stephanie surely had a really great dynamic that they brought to the show. It was fun.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with Brandy. We're still good friends.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed her, but Brandy also, like me, had been a performer. She was a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader and a performer. Yes. So she knew the formula. So we always fought, and I knew what she was doing. And I get real mad at her, and I thought, oh, she knows the formula just like me, so I should just let it go. You know, let it happen, and then let it go and move on. So kind of that's how we did it. But everybody else carried the fights and everything and the grudges season after season after season. They're still carrying it. I moved on. I'm like, what? We fought about that 4 years ago? What are you talking? I don't even know what they're talking about. So I think that was a big downfall, too, is that we didn't let things go from season to season. But, you know, it was – and then the other thing that was really fun was – after being aired and people knew you were a housewife, to go in public. And it just was like crazy. I mean, the state fair are my people. You know, people come up and, oh, what a picture. Oh, start crying. Little kids would cry. I was like, why is a four-year-old watching this show? It's not appropriate for a four-year-old to watch this show. And to see that kind of attention and that adoration. Yeah. And I mean, obviously it's intoxicating and addictive. You just, I mean, you know, that's why it's so hard for people to leave, because it's golden handcuffs. And it's, I mean, there's so many things that you like about it, about yeah. being famous and about having these opportunities and these doors open, these free things, these things paid for you to do. I mean, it's just, it's really a different experience that not everybody in this world is going to be having. And whether it's through Housewives or something else, when you become famous overnight, your life changes.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just still laughing about the pictures and the four-year-old watching. That is
yeah,
so
crying,
funny.
Crying. Oh my God, you're my favorite. I said, you're four. How can I be your favorite?
Yeah, how can you be? You're not supposed to even be up at that time. So when the show ended, and of course, I still continue to follow you on Instagram and everything, and I've watched, I'm just like, is there anything that you don't do? It's like, you're a chef. And I'm going, I'm not a chef, and I'm not, my husband cooks. My husband does all the cooking, and I'm very blessed in that. I like to cook for parties.
Yes.
But not daily. It's just too much to deal with. But, you know, the cooking, the skincare, the just everything that you have going on. I mean, you said, you know, you're acting and you've done that a long time. But when that show ended, what changed?
I actually did have more time in my schedule, because I understand it seems like we're shooting primary principal photography for about 4 months.
Yeah.
And that is 5 days a week. And that means you're going to work 3 to 5 days a week, depending on what schedule they send you.
Oh, that's a
and
lot.
It could be 2 to 3 scenes a day. It could be one scene a day. You could have a day off. It's, you only have Sundays and Mondays, but when you're having 2 days off, they're calling you all day long about your story and they're taking notes. And I was doing this. I was also thinking about everything that happened over the week and what I would have to do the next week to follow up, what conversations I was going to have, who I was going to have to confront. And then I would write it down. I'm older. I can't remember everything. So I would write mine down and make my notes and say, okay, this week I want to cover this, this, and this. Also, it made it easier on the producers. Now people get mad. Oh, you scripted the show. No, I didn't script the show. This is what happened. This is what I want to talk about. This is how to get to the point quickly, because I know where they're going, instead of wasting people's time. Right. And, you know, it just, for me, it was a more efficient, because I did have to run a skincare company and a nutrition company, which was different than everybody else. And mm-hmm. I had to influence and I had to make appearances. So I had to figure out how is all this going to fit into my day and make the most of their time. Production's very expensive. And that's how I said, I have a producer's lens. So wasting people's time is not something I like to do, because I know how much it costs per day. I mean, we're talking a show that at the minimum is $1 million an episode, and probably way more for, like, if you're talking LA or New York or Atlanta, we were in the low end. So we're talking $1 million up per episode. So that's a lot of time, manpower, and cost for a production. An episode, it's a minimum of $1 million. Yeah. Yeah. A minimum. So, and I think more, probably a lot more in other cities, but just because we didn't have a higher budget. But after that, I thought, when I was on the show, to go back to your question, how can I make the most of this? What am I going to do when this is over? Yes, I want to go back to acting. Also, I love to cook. So every season I made sure there was a cooking scene in one of the season's episodes. And yeah. my husband and I would do cooking competitions. I remember I had to cook at some place in Austin where we went. I was in charge of cooking the dinner. And so I'd always be doing that, because that way I could say I am a housewife chef or cook.
Yeah.
But then when it was over, I then decided to go to culinary school. They have like an executive program at Dallas College. It's very good here. It's one of the best, top 10 in the United States.
Yeah.
So I went there, and I went at 4 in the morning, or I got up at 4 in the morning, went there at 6. From 6 until 9, I was at culinary school. Then I came home, and I'm not a morning person, just so you know. And I was at home at 9, and then I could do my day, and then also practice my recipes to go back the next day. And then we'd have tests and different things like that. And then food costs, which is a math is not my thing at all. So food costs and all those kind of things, but that would be able to give me the French background, the culinary background, the basic knowledge. And then I decided that I wanted to learn barbecue because I was emceeing barbecue festivals at a casino in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
I got introduced to a gentleman that owns a marketing company, and he hired me to do the A&A Barbecue Fest, then the A&A Brew Fest. And then I went to Mohegan Sun and did an appearance there. So I started doing these different festivals and emceeing, and I met all these barbecue people and these chefs. And I thought, you know, there's not a lot of women in barbecue, and it's not like you have to go to the CIA. You have to study and learn, and I bet I could get these guys to teach me how to do it.
Yeah.
So that's how I ended up in barbecue. And then I found out there was a lot of nice women in barbecue that were also willing to share their stories and their secrets and invited me to their teams. So I've been competing in barbecue for a couple of years, not a lot because of my time, but I went to Memphis in May and competed in Whole Hog. We got 10th this year. I got to inject the hog and season the hog. And then I didn't have to babysit it all night, thank goodness. I mean, somebody has to stay there all night and watch it cook. That's not my job. I don't want to do that. I'm too old for that. Yeah. And then we've gotten, like, next week I'll be in Charleston. I'll be doing Holy Smokes Festival, which is, I don't know what I'm cooking. They haven't given me my recipe yet. I've been at World Food Championship as a judge. I'm a judge with the SCA, State Competition Association, Terlingua. I judge a lot of different things. I did Food Network. Michael Simon's show, Barbecue USA, where I was a judge. So I'm really enjoying it. And I have not done a lot recently because of the move. So now that we're getting the house set up, we will start doing more videos and things of that nature.
Yeah, it looked like you, well, first of all, I don't even know, do you sleep?
I don't actually, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. You don't sleep very, because I mean, there's people in my life, my close friends that say, you know, they're always talking about my schedule, and I don't know, how do you do all this stuff? Hey, and I'm hearing your schedule, and I'm like, oh gosh, that must be what it sounds like to them. But that is amazing. And I love the whole barbecue thing. I mean, everything you cook, I'm wanting to go, okay, can't she just make that somehow that people can buy it?
Well, I'm working on rubs and sauces. And like I said, when I get my kitchen finished up here, I do live fire cooking. So the chef I was in culinary school with is from Argentina. And we decided to partner together in a company called Fire Show. So we're doing private chef.
Really cool.
Yeah, private chef experiences. We'll be doing rubs and sauces and all that together. So that's coming around the corner. It's just a matter of fitting all this in my schedule and getting this house to where I'm not. They're still working on my kitchen right now. Like today, if you heard all the noise in the background.
No, I didn't hear it, but I did see a preview. I think you did a walkthrough on, and it looks beautiful.
Thank you.
Although it's like, so it's so large. It's like so many steps from here. You're going to get all your steps taken care of just walking around your home.
Well, in the backyard is about an acre. So I built, I have a lot of land for growing vegetables, bees, a lot of more barbecue pits and tools and things. My husband's like, I don't want this to be a barbecue university in the backyard. Okay. So we're not having all this stuff. I go, oh, you travel a lot. When you come home, you may notice something that changes. It's okay.
Yeah. You may notice something. Now that's funny. And by the way, I saw his commercial. That's pretty amazing.
Oh, isn't it awesome? So you won't believe this, Erica. I kept telling him because he looks so good. I said, on television, you're like the silver fox. You could get all this work. He wouldn't do it. So finally, I talked him into putting his headshots on Casting Networks and Actors Access. My agent then, you know, he wants more headshots, but Jeremy's too busy, even though he's a photographer. So my agent was like, I need new headshots. In the meantime, Jeremy just signed up on Casting Networks and submitted himself for two commercials. The second job, Toyota commercial, he got. Okay. He looks amazing in a cowboy hat. He can't stand country music. I'm like, you are going to do this. So he did. And now he's like, well, it's not so bad being an actor. I kind of like this, you know? I mean, he saw himself. I can tell that big grin. And so now he is also the face of Coldwell Banker Real Estate. He just did that. I mean, he's just getting stuff all the time, and he would probably get more, but he has been working and traveling, so he hasn't been able to do the auditions or do the actual shoots. We just did an audition yesterday or day before yesterday for Super 8, I think, motels or something.
Yeah.
So it was fun. We got to be stupid and crazy on camera together.
For Super 8, looky there.
Yeah, exactly. So he's, I think Jeremy, if he could have more time, would do a lot more work. And I think now he's going to be taking acting classes with my teacher and my agent. If he said,
oh my gosh,
he said, I won't say the word. He said, with your blank, blank photos, you're still getting all this work. I need some new photos.
You think he could make some time for some headshots?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Or something. Now, okay, so I could not believe when I saw your pictures on that billboard in Times Square. And I was like, is that when the reason why I didn't mean that, you knew I didn't mean that, like disrespectfully saying, is that real? But so many times there's things people can put things on, like a friend of mine put her picture out of a bus, you know, whatever. And so that's why I was just like, that is the coolest thing ever. I mean, that must be. That would be one of my all-time favorite things is to be in Times Square.
It's on my bucket list. I always wanted it because I lived in New York and studied as an actor and was a model for so long. And I always wanted my picture on a billboard, but I was always too short or it wasn't my time or whatever it was. And to do that at 54 years old, it happened just so haphazardly. I luckily met this amazing photographer, Lori Sapio, who lives in Chicago. We met at a friend's wedding shower here in Dallas. And she's came up and introduced herself and she said, oh, I'd like to do a photo shoot with you. And I was like, okay, fine, whatever. You know, I needed new photos because Jeremy is working all the time. He can't always do my photos. And it's good to have other photographers as well. Yeah. Plus Jeremy says I'm his worst client ever. And he can't stand to take photos of me because he doesn't like to Photoshop anything. So, so Lori did a photo shoot with me. And then I was in Chicago for a barbecue festival where I was I was covering it for social media. Windy City Smokeout. And so she arranged a photo shoot at Duck Duck Goat, which is owned by Stephanie Izzard, fabulous, very famous chef. And she was on Top Chef. And so we went to her place and did the photo shoot. I didn't think anything about it. Just went on my way. Next thing I know, I start getting all these, the first photo shoot that she did, by the way, I got a magazine cover. And I thought, well, how did this happen? So every time she was submitting photos, I was either getting big campaigns or in the magazine or magazine covers. And so she's been continuously shooting me now. This last one was Esta Magazine, is a fashion magazine. And they also had the billboard and they asked to put the photo on the billboard. So that was really cool. Unfortunately, it didn't stay up very long, but it was like a day or something like that. But I don't care. I'll take the day.
But you did it.
But I did it and it's checked off. Check off, you know, and... Yeah,
hey, but so you have it recorded, so it will never die.
Exactly. We almost didn't because I didn't know what time it was going to be up, but I didn't have anybody over there. I could not get from Dallas to there because I was busy. So we were trying to find somebody to go do it, but they did. So we got it.
Got it. You got it. That is so cool. I love that. Well, oh my goodness. I don't even know. I mean, there's so many things. Now, wait, tell me real quick again. What does that mean, the fire shows? What are you actually doing? Are you doing it yet?
So we could do it tomorrow if somebody wanted us to do it. I don't have a package a proposal that I put out there on the internet, but it's live fire cooking. So if you wanted to hire us to come to your house for a private dinner party and you wanted like hanging tomahawk steaks or you wanted a full lamb on an asador, we could do all that with live fire. And so we would do, it's part of a presentation in theater in addition to the wonderful wine and food that we provide. So, and Segundo from Buenos Aires, he went to French culinary school. So he's kind of, he's my mentor and my teacher. So together we work really well.
That is so, sounds like a blast. And I mean, you're going to have to clone yourself somehow because I don't know how people will start booking and then you're not going to have time to do them all.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's even going to happen. Your skincare. Okay. I always get this twisted. Hard night. Good morning.
Yes. Everybody does. They call hard days, night, all kinds of stuff. I mean, everything you could hard night, good day.
I had to look at it because I twist it all the time. Hard night. Good morning. How long has that product been out or is it it's an entire skincare line?
Yeah. I've had that skincare line since 2008, believe it or not. Okay. Got to look back. I have been through the ringer with regards to businesses. In 2008, when I started that company, the real estate crash happened. You remember that? All the mortgages and everything. So nobody was taking new skincare lines. Nobody was buying anything. I had one product. I thought I was going to eat it all. And then Whole Foods came to me and they took my line on. Well, they had me compete with Dr. Hauschka at the time. And I believe they don't even carry that anymore. So they kind of got rid of their luxury skincare So we sell just a few SKUs at Whole Foods, but only in the Southwest, not in the other regions. The people would turn over so often. I'd go in there and educate the people and the Whole Foods stores, and then they'd be gone. And then I'd have to go re-educate. It was just a lot for me. So now people just buy because they know the brand. And it's just, like I said, the Southwest. So it's natural, aloe vera based. It's high in botanicals and actives. And the last 2 years, I've come out with 3 new products. I've come out with Amino Bright, which is a resurfacing cream, the skin repair cream, Burning the Midnight Oil, which is an oil adjunct therapy hydration to all your other products. And then S3, which is three sets of essential oils. So different ones that I created. Yeah.
Three essential oils. And which one is the essential oils in? Which product then?
So it's in Hard Knock Good Morning, but it's called S3, E-S-S-T-H-R-E-E, because S and three. And then it has something called Into the Woods, which is kind of like a thieves kind of detoxing for the house. You've got Flower Bomb, which is a spicy floral, and you've got Happy Dance, which is a really uplifting aroma for, I use it when I work and when I need invigoration and my attitude, attitude adjustment.
Yeah, it does. It's great stuff. That's awesome. I love essential oils and use them myself, but I definitely.
But Amino, I can't really, I don't know when is this going to air, but Amino Bright just won a huge award, but I'm not allowed to mention it until the middle of November. So I don't know if.
It'll be after that.
So, okay, so on November 14th, I'll just let you know, we will be able to announce that we won Best Skin Repair Cream of the Year by the Innovation Beauty Awards. So out of 2,500 products, amazing. So I'm very proud of that.
500 products?
Yes. Very, very, very excited about that. So we're gearing up for that coming up, and I hope to God it sells out. I don't want any more. I want it all to sell out and then have to reorder because I just want it to be that popular.
That sounds good. I know I glanced last night online and I thought, oh, there's a whole, because I thought it was just one or two pieces. And then I thought, oh, there's a whole line. So who knows? I may have to go on there and order some and check it out and give it a try.
Well, I'll send you the product that I'm talking about. So you can, if you want to post about it, if you like it and tell people about it, I would appreciate it. I mean, I can't make you post about it, but if you like it, please do.
Yeah, no, that would be great.
You know, because you were in the skincare business.
Yep.
There you go. I mean.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, even though I'm not in that industry anymore, I retired from it, but I still get people know that was my history. Mm-hmm. I still do permanent makeup and I taught for over 30 years, eyebrows, eyeliner, lips. I did all that. So. You know, I'm still in that industry a little bit and people are always asking. So it's great to have something that you can recommend that works, because we both know there's a lot of things out there that just don't work.
That don't work. I know I have a whole, you know, that is it called the $10,000 junk drawer product? Because I have to try everything. So it's like my graveyard of everything.
Yes, the graveyard.
The graveyard. Yes.
The graveyard. Yes. I worked at Nordstrom many times or a couple of times, Neiman's. And then some of those creams you're like, you're going to spend how much on that? And it's going to do what? Nothing.
Mm-hmm. No. Nothing. Exactly.
Nothing unless it's really active. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have just a few more minutes, I wanted to, unless there's something else you wanted to share. I wanted to ask you about one more thing, but you tell me if there's something you would like to share.
I just would like for people that are watching this to just continue to pray for me and God's favor in my life and direction in my life. Because, it's been a hard few years. Real Housewives was very hard. And then coming out of Real Housewives and having a small business is difficult for anybody. I mean, female and small businesses are really challenging. So, and I want whatever is supposed to happen in my life, which all these doors are still opening for acting, things like that. I would just continue to have God's favor and that this would be my time in my life. That would be my time in the sun, because And I mean that not in a matter of fame and fortune, but I mean that in a matter of grace, mercy, God's favor, and that I will be remembered for being a person that people looked up to and aspired to, and that were inspired by, you know, and for good reasons, not bad reasons. Yes. And that I would also be a good friend, a good wife, a good daughter, and just someone that others want to emulate because of my behavior.
Wow.
So pray for that. Just pray for God's favor. How's that?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure that, you know,
and his will. That's the most important thing, is his will.
and his will in your life. Yes, that was beautiful. And I heard you get emotional over that because I know what, you know, I can tell what kind of person you are just from, you know, just, I don't know you personally, but just from even this interview, just knowing your heart and heart for Jesus and what you want him to do in your life and through your life and how other people see you. So that's really, that speaks volumes about you. And thank you for sharing with us all of these great things and all the fun talk about Real Housewives of Dallas, but also about your faith and how you walk through life.
Well, so. God has a plan. You know, I told you before, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Jeremiah 29:11, my favorite ever verse. He also says that he formed us before we were ever formed in the womb, and we're fearfully and wonderfully made, and he knew exactly what he had made us for, what purpose. And I believe that. I also believe that Psalms 37:4, if you follow me, I'll give you the desires of your heart. And God knows that I've desired to be in the career I'm in since I was 4 years old. And I believe that he's going to honor me because I'm a follower of his.
Yes, absolutely. The story, I know we're about to close this out, but the story. Yes, gosh, the story about you falling off that horse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When you sent that over to me last night, I just had to stop. Mm-hmm. And it was just so beautiful to hear how you came from a family of people praying for you and then friends prayed for you. And I don't know what a hunter, it says you were.
So I was an equestrian in college. In addition to going to college, I went to a school where it was very famous for Olympic athlete riders. So mm-hmm. I was riding there half a day and then going to school the rest of the day. A hunter and jumper is somebody that jumps over fences. So if you look at the Olympics, you'll see that. And then hunts are fox hunt kind of things that they emulate in these competitions.
Yes.
And so I was there. I was practicing for a meet that weekend. I did not have my horse. I had another horse. And it was a school horse and it was abused. And so I fell off the horse because it freaked out over the jump. And I landed on my back and I broke my back, but I was paralyzed from the waist down. And the doctor, I did the same kind of thing that Christopher Reeve did. Do you remember he had that accident jumping at a horse? So I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't eat. I was in the hospital in Lynchburg, Virginia, a tiny hospital for 3 or 4 months and didn't know if I would ever walk. The doctors weren't sure. They didn't do surgery because they couldn't even touch my spinal cord. So I laid there for many months, had a lot of prayers, was angry at God. At that point, really angry. And I went through a lot of times in my life where I've been angry at God, didn't believe in God, mad at God, was back to God. I mean, ups and downs.
Sure.
And I remember my grandmother, I grew up in Pentecostal, not Baptist church, Pentecostal church. So there was dancing in the aisles. There was, there was tongues, there was singing, praying, everything. My grandfather was a prophet. So he would interpret the people that would speak in tongues.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so my grandmother was calling every day and praying. I remember that. So she was alive. She was calling the Liberty University was down the street, even though I went to Sweetbriar, and having the pastors come over and pray for me and the prayer team of the kids.
Yeah.
So remember Glenn, my stepfather, my dad who raised me, came to visit once, and he told them to take the tubes out of my nose because they were feeding me through a tube. And then basically after that, I just walked. It was a miracle. I mean, they stopped feeding me through the tubes. He just said, we're not doing this anymore. Take those tubes out of her. And I miraculously walked again. And it was a lot of recovery, though. I had to have surgery in 2004, but I've never had back pain that much anymore. I mean, where everybody else for their age has the same back pain I have.
Sure.
So that was a miracle from God. And that's when I knew, I think, even though I went through ups and downs after that and made bad decisions like everybody does, that God still wanted something from my life. That, you know, not that you couldn't have something for your life, you're paralyzed. I'm just saying he wanted something different from my life, you know, than for me to be that. That wasn't my story. Everybody has a story. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't my story. And if it had been my story, I would have figured it out because that's the kind of person I am. And I would have gone with my life, told my story and lived my life. But he wasn't finished with me. And I could have died. I mean, honestly, I could have died. And so it was just, it was a really difficult time, and I missed most of my sophomore year of school. And that was the only year that I didn't get a 3.8 or 3.9. So I didn't graduate with high honors, unfortunately, because of my grades that year. But I was always a straight A student, high honors. And that kind of went to that.
For good reason. You were out. I bet. I mean, you know, that's the other thing too, is so many times in this day and time, just in our world, we think that miracles are not possible. That people think, well, we do, you and I, and a lot of people around us do, but there are people that think that that was just for biblical times, that that was not for now. And we, you know, the power of prayer and the power of people believing that you can be healed is huge. And it happens. I mean, I had a woman on my show that had MS for 20 years, 20 medications, and was in a wheelchair. Mm. And a lot of spiritual growth. She was working with a spiritual counselor for about 8 months, and she is a runner again. I mean, oh, wow. It's wow. Unbelievable. But I mean, you can have healing. And that's, I mean, wow, I just can't imagine going from not walking all that time and thinking that this is your life to being able to walk again. Did you ever ride a horse again?
I have. I don't. I'm very careful about it because those are. It's if I. The doctor has said if I fall off again in that way, that it's lights out. So let's not do that. But I do. If you see my videos, I work out very rigorously, lift heavy weights, have no problem with it. I train, and I think that's important to me is my training and everything because my mother has bad osteoporosis and my grandmother, and I don't want that program. So I'm very careful about that, keeping my body in shape. I had an ankle replacement, so I couldn't work out for about 3 years, and I, you know, got really heavy. But then, as soon as I could go back, I went back. So it's those things are important to me. But I also think, back to your point, we are, in my opinion, in the end times. In the end times, you're going to see a lot of miracles happen. You're going to see a lot of horrible things happen, but you're going to also see a lot of miracles happen, and that's very biblical. So I believe that, yes, all this stuff is happening right now for a reason. It's going to get worse. It's also going to lead to a lot of miracles for people that are believers or unbelievers to be called to God and to be called to their Savior. So I think that's really important to watch for at this time. In addition to seeing everything else happening, watch for the miracles all around you because they are there and Jesus will perform them because he said he would. You're going to see him in the end times.
That's beautiful. And I agree 100% as well. So thank you so much, Deandra, for sharing everything and for just being my guest and not even knowing me and agreeing to be on the show. So
oh, I appreciate it. And I had a wonderful time talking with you. We have a lot of things in common. And if I come to South Dakota, I'm going to come see you. You should.